Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS, in the world of SOA. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how, as an IMS 10 customer, you can use Rational and WebSphere tooling to quickly and easily integrate IMS transactions into SOA solutions by exploiting technologies such as web services and service component architecture. The speaker for today's teleconference is Alan Cooper, IMS consultant, IBM UK. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Cooper. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Hello there, everybody. Today, I'm going to talk about exploiting IMS assets within a service-oriented architecture, and in particular, I want to indicate just how quick and simple it can be to develop IMS SOA solutions. So moving on to slide 2, this is our standard disclaimer, just in case I inadvertently mislead or misinform you. And moving quickly to page 3, my agenda, I'm going to start by quickly reviewing by what I understand by service-oriented architecture, and then I'll mention the various application development tools that I'll be referencing throughout the presentation. Then we'll look at where IMS transactions fit into the picture and briefly mention the various transaction options that are supported when developing SOA solutions with IMSTM. And to complete this middle section, we'll look in a little more detail at the use of the three key tools for creating services based on IMS transactions. Then I'll discuss callout, where an IMS transaction calls out to an external service. This has been possible for a long time, but IMS 10 makes it much easier to accomplish. Then, in the final section, we'll look at writing services that run in WebSphere Application Server and that directly access IMS databases. So moving to page 4. Service-oriented architecture, or SOA, means different things to different people. And we, being IT professionals, tend to think of it as being about IT technology. And some even see it as a justification to change the software or hardware platform, a view sometimes encouraged by various salespersons or even architects. But at heart, the true vision of SOA is about the business. It's about understanding and modeling the business processes and seeing them as composed of building blocks or services. This service orientation makes it easier and quicker to modify or add services so that the business can be flexible and respond fast and effectively to the changing business needs. Some of the software concepts involved have been around for a very long time, modular programming, code reuse, and so on. But one of the key things I think that has made SOA practical is the arrival of tooling that, first of all, allows the creation of a business model that is easy to use and to maintain, and secondly, that enables an IT model to be derived from the business model. Anyway, moving on to page 5, some terminology. A service, then, is fundamentally a building block of a business process. Some services will be implemented by people performing administrative or manual tasks, but many will be implemented by corresponding IT services. And service orientation is a way of viewing your business as linked services. We're still not talking about technology, we're talking about a thought process, a business philosophy. And what is SOA? It's quite simply an IT architectural style that supports the service orientation thought process that makes it a reality. And the final piece of terminology on this slide is a composite application. This is the set of actual running services that have been assembled and strung together to support what the business does. So, slide 6, ways to implement an IT service. Sometimes the terms web services and SOA are used as if they mean the same thing. In fact, an SOA may well exploit web services, but not necessarily so. When a pre-existing standard technology, such as Java Enterprise, Java Beans, or MQ, when this is widely used throughout an enterprise, this can become the foundation of an SOA, and web services might not be required. So, for example, in an SOA, each service can be coded as an EJB. Some EJBs can call IMS transactions, others might just access IMS databases, and so on. Or, where MQ is used throughout an enterprise, the different services can each be associated with a unique MQ queue. And so a service can be implemented by anything that services an MQ queue, an EJB, an IMS transaction accessed via the IMS MQ bridge, a BMP even that uses explicit MQ calls, and so on. But web services come into their own when multiple heterogeneous technologies are already in use in the enterprise and need to be integrated. Or perhaps when a service needs to be accessed from outside the enterprise by your customers, your suppliers, or your partners, and so on. Because a web service is an open standard way of implementing a service. Service component architecture is an application architecture for simplifying the implementation of an SOA, and it might or might not involve web services. And we'll say more about this as we move on to the next slide, page 7. SOA, as we've seen, is about more than just services. It's about processes or coarse-grained services composed of finer-grained services. Service Component Architecture, or SCA, has the objective of hiding the services technology from the programmer. The programmer doesn't need to know about instantiating an EJB or accessing an MQ queue or invoking a web service. He uses a single, simple standard API to call a service, and the system itself works out how to actually invoke that service. And the necessary information is contained, of course, in an XML document. When the programmer is writing his own service, he can do it in a variety of ways, and this includes just coding it as a simple Java class, a plain old Java object or a POJO. Assembling the services to form processes is done using WebSphere Integration Developer, and we'll return to look at this and the other AD tools shortly. And the runtime environment for SCA solutions is WebSphere Process Server. So moving on to slide 8, very important one, the role of legacy in SOA. When you create the business model and derive from it the IT model, there is a high chance that most of the IT service functions will already exist. You've probably been running your business on computers for many years. Many of these functions will execute on the mainframe and in IMS systems. IMS transactions are especially likely to be a good match for the newly defined services. They are probably designed by systems analysts working with the business departments. And because of IMS's device independence, there is unlikely to be any presentation logic mixed in with the business and the data logic. And one of the key objectives when implementing an SOA is to reuse the core business legacy assets. SOA shouts, legacy is good. In fact, it may well be impractical, and it's certainly considerably slower and more expensive to have to rewrite the core business applications. In other words, from an IMS perspective, a key objective of SOA is to integrate the existing IMS transactions into the SOA solution. So, we'll now move on to look at how IBM's application development tools make this a simple and efficient possibility. Page 9. Three AD tools are relevant when service-enabling IMS transactions. The tool which used to be used to develop Java solutions was WebSphere Studio Application Developer Integration Edition. And clearly, with a name like that, it had to be replaced with something easier to say. So the current tool is Rational Application Developer, or RAD. It is the Java workbench used for all aspects of Java development, including building web services and integrating back-end systems such as IMS. RAD is also a component of the two other tools mentioned here, WebSphere Integration Developer and Rational Developer for System Z. Both these tools contain RAD. WebSphere Integration Developer, or WID, is used to assemble and wire together services to form higher-level services or processes exploiting service component architecture. Rational Developer for System Z, or its predecessor, WebSphere Developer for System Z, as well as having a Java workbench from RAD, also provides a COBOL and a PL1 workbench. And among its huge range of features is the facility for generating web services that run on the IMS SOAP gateway. And we'll be returning to this later. Moving on to slide 10. This summarizes how these three tools are used to service enable IMS transactions. Where each service is represented by an MQQ, then no extra code need be written to integrate an IMS transaction. The IMS MQ bridge enables that solution. However, most customers have an environment that requires a different approach to creating their SOA. And to service enable an IMS transaction, in most cases, requires creating a piece of Java code that implements the service and which in turn calls an IMS transaction to perform the business logic. RAD, WID, and RDZ can all be used to generate this Java code, and they all present the user with a common look and feel. RAD is used to create a Java component, such as Enterprise Java Bean or a web service that calls an IMS transaction. If you have the IMS SOAP gateway, then you use RDZ or WDZ to generate a web service that runs on the gateway and calls an IMS transaction. And WID is used to assemble SCA solutions, although it does have some Java component generation facilities, as we'll see later. So, moving on to page 11. This shows the main ways in which IMS transactions are invoked within an SOA. The service will be implemented by a Java application. This can run in WebSphere Application Server, shown in the upper left part of the slide, and in which case the service could be a servlet, a Java server page, an EJB, or a web service. This Java component can access IMSTM either synchronously via IMS Connect or asynchronously via WebSphere MQ. Personally, I would always choose the synchronous implementation using IMS Connect. It is certainly easier to create the synchronous solution, as we'll see shortly. And since the IMS transaction is being called like a subroutine of the service, I'm not sure I'd ever choose to use an asynchronous messaging intermediary to call a subroutine. But if you want to, you can. The alternative way of using a web service is to deploy it on the IMS SOAP gateway, shown in the lower left part of the slide. This, too, uses IMS Connect to synchronously execute an IMS transaction. So moving on to page 12. Synchronous solutions developed with RAD offer the greatest flexibility and support the widest range of functions. Other solutions offer a reduced subset of these functions. And so, for example, IMS provides many application-related options. Where appropriate, these are supported with the synchronous service solutions that can be created with RAD. So, for example, services can use single-segment or multi-segment messages. Services can call conversational transactions. They can submit input-only transactions. Services can asynchronously retrieve messages that are perhaps undelivered replies from earlier transactions or its alternate PCB output. A service can specify the L-term name to be put into the application program's IOPCB or the map name that we used to call the MFS mod name to go into the IOPCB. And a service can receive back with the reply message the map name that was specified by the IMS application on the IOPCB insert call. And there are several general processing options which can also be specified by the service, and this is covered on the next page. So moving to page 13, when you write or generate a Java service component that calls an IMS transaction, this component will exploit a set of Java classes called the IMS TM Resource Adapter. It's what we used to call the IMS Connector for Java. It's supplied with IMS, and it also comes with RAD so that you can test your applications while still on RAD. This Java component creates or accepts from a remote client a message to be processed by IMS. This message will be in the form of a Java object, a message bean. The service component will call a method of the IMS TM resource adapter, passing it the message bean, together with two other objects containing properties, what more traditional folk like me would call parameter blocks. And these are called the connection spec and the interaction spec. The IMS TM resource adapter then extracts the message data from the message bean and builds the actual IMS message. And it builds the OTMA and IMS connect headers using the properties provided in the two parameter block objects. And shortly we'll see how these properties acquire their values. The IMS TM resource adapter then interacts with another Java facility, a connection factory, to get a connection to IMS Connect, and it then issues the appropriate TCP/IP socket calls. When the transaction reply comes back from IMS via IMS Connect, the IMS TM resource adapter builds the corresponding reply message bean. The reply Java object defined in the service components may contain more than just the reply message bean. It may also contain one or more return properties. For example, the map name used for the reply message insert call. And in this case, the IMS TM resource adapter will extract the properties from the OTMA header and build the reply object to be passed back to the service component containing the message bean and the property values. So, page 14, this shows the main properties that I've been referring to and that are used to build the OTMA headers. When you use RAD to create the Java component, you can provide the values for each of these properties at build time. They become hard-coded in the service. Alternatively, you can make it so that some or all of these properties have their values dynamically set by the service or the caller of the service. And this is called exposing the properties. So the input properties that you can expose include the user ID and password when you're using component managed sign-on. The type of the input message, it can be an input-only transaction or, more commonly, a send and receive transaction, or it can be an asynchronous retrieval request, sometimes called a resume T-pipe. The input can specify timeout values. A very important parameter it can specify is the commit mode, which determines how IMS handles the reply message and whether or not the reply is to be placed on an output queue, which would then provide the possibility of doing asynchronous message retrieval. And in this case, what queue name is going to be used for these undelivered replies. As we mentioned earlier, you can also pass the LTerm name and the map name or the MFS mod name to go into the application program's IOPCB. So those are some of the input properties. The output properties that can be returned to the reply message include the reply map name and, for conversational transactions, an indicator from IMS of whether the conversation has terminated or not. So moving on to page 15. The diagram here shows the three basic steps to service enable an IMS transaction using RAD, and in particular to create the synchronous solution. Each step is accomplished by executing a RAD wizard. The first step, or wizard, is to create the so-called data bindings. These are Java classes. Each class represents a specific IMS message segment, and when instantiated, the object, a message bean, is the Java representation of an IMS message segment. The input to this wizard is the COBOL or PL1 or indeed C source code for the IMS transaction, and in particular, the structures that define the input and output messages. In these generated data bindings classes are defined some general purpose methods for setting values in and getting values from every field in the IMS message segment. These classes are used at runtime by the IMSTM resource adapter. They can also be used by the remote Java client that calls the service to build the input message bean or to extract values from the reply message bean. The second wizard is the one that actually creates the Java program containing the method that calls the IMS transaction, what I call the run transaction method. Because this solution, using the IMSTM resource adapter, is exploiting the Java 2 Enterprise Edition connection architecture, this Java program is referred to in RAD as a J2C bean. This is a program that receives from the caller an input message bean, as defined in the input data bindings class. It puts values into two properties objects, the connection spec and the interaction spec, and calls the IMSTM resource adapter, passing it all three objects. And we'll say more about this wizard in a moment. The third wizard is used, once you've created your J2C bean, to take it and wrap it with additional Java classes to create a deployable unit. It can be a Java server page, an EJB, or a web service. Initially, you would deploy it within the integrated WebSphere application server provided with RAD, so as to test and validate your Java code before deploying it into a production environment. Now, note that so far we have not mentioned anything about writing Java code. The data bindings and the J2C bean have all been generated by RAD. And also, for any pedants who might be listening, in practice, you typically start the generation process with the second wizard, which will, in fact, invoke the first wizard when you need to define the input to and the output from the J2C bean's run transaction method. Moving on to page 16, this provides more detail about the second wizard, one used to build the J2C bean. The wizard will present a panel, shown here on the right, with boxes to be filled in. This is where you enter the values for the various properties discussed a few moments ago, the type of the transaction, the commit mode, the timeout values, the L-term name, and so on. And I think it's self-evident, but I would suggest that this generation process should be carried out with some teamwork between an IMS specialist and a Java programmer. Page 17. Earlier we talked about exposing input properties, allowing properties to be set by the caller of the service. The panel we saw on the previous slide and shown again here on the left is used to enter hard-coded properties associated with the transaction. But by clicking the edit button shown in the red oval on the slide, you can get to a panel with a tick-the-boxes selection panel of the properties to be exposed to the caller of the service. So it is very, very easy to add these properties to the input that needs to be defined by the caller of the service. If you want to expose output properties, properties that are to be returned to the caller, such as the output map name, then the process is not quite so trivial. The Java programmer would set up a new class containing as its variables the output message bean and the required properties. He would code some very basic get and set methods for these objects, just one or two lines of Java each. The run transaction method of the J2C bean is updated to return an object of this new class to the caller, and the programmer simply adds a comment to the J2C bean for each property being exposed, and then RAD automatically generates the additional code in the J2C bean from the comments themselves. So, exposing output properties does require a small amount of programming, but quite genuinely, we really are talking about a five-minute task here. So slide 18. This mentions some other IMS options which are supported by RAD. Firstly, the data bindings wizard can handle COBOL and PL1 message structures that contain repeating groups, where the number of occurrences in a group is typically indicated in a field in the message. And RAD actually generates a separate class for each repeating group. And the message bean, the full message bean, will include in its data one or more objects of these classes. Handling multi-segment messages also requires a very small amount of programming. You use the RAD data bindings wizard, as before, to create a class for each message segment. The Java programmer then writes an additional data binding, a very simple class which represents the complete multi-segment message and which includes as its variables the individual segment beans. And this new class is the one that's then specified when you're using the second wizard to create the run transaction method of the J2C bean. And thirdly, you can also generate a J2C bean that executes an IMS conversational transaction. The J2C beans we've seen so far have contained a single method, typically the one used to run the transaction. But you can generate a J2C bean and add multiple methods to it, enabling you to run different transactions from the same J2C bean. And when executing a sequence of IMS conversational transactions, the J2C bean has traditionally contained different methods for calling the different legs of the conversation. It could also contain a method that sends in to IMS an indication that the conversation is to be terminated, rather like a slash exit command. And so for conversations, the same instance of the Java service component would be used to handle the whole conversation. The downside of this is that the Java component will then tie up a socket connection to IMS Connect for the duration of the IMS conversation. So IMS 10 offers a different alternative solution. It allows the conversation token to be exposed so that the remote caller of the service receives the token back from IMS with the reply from the first leg of the conversation, and the caller then returns that token as an input property on each subsequent leg of the conversation, and so can use a different J2C bean and a different socket for each leg of the conversation. And in IMS 10, this enhancement is rather grandly called IMS SOA Composite Business Application Support. Moving on to slide 19. Having created our J2C bean, the third wizard is used to create the deployable component. You have a choice of a Java server page, an EJB, or a web service. And this is extremely simple. You just select the J2C bean and specify the type of deployable component you wish to create, and that's it. With a click of the mouse, all the necessary additional Java, and for web services, the web service description language in XML, this is all generated for you. Now, the first place to actually deploy it would be on the integrated WebSphere application server that comes with RAD, so that you can test and validate the service while you're still working on, as a developer on RAD. A few clicks of the mouse is all it takes to start the integrated WAS and deploy on it the newly generated Java component. And shown on the slide are examples of two of the RAD-generated GUIs for testing a JSP. On the left, it's showing testing a JSP. On the right, showing testing a web service. You enter the input as character data in the appropriate boxes, and then click the invoke or the go button, and hopefully get back the reply. And in the case of testing a web service, you can also see the SOAP message data flows in the panel there at the bottom right. And so that completes my sort of very quick overview of the use of RAD to generate the synchronous solution for integrating an IMS transaction. Page 20 discusses the case where you want a Java service component to use MQ to call an IMS transaction. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not actually attracted by this implementation, but it can be done. The key difference from what we saw with the synchronous approach is that you have to actually write the Java EJB that uses Java messaging service to invoke the transaction. You can still exploit the RAD-generated data bindings, and you can use RAD to generate a web service, for example, from the EJB that you've written. So page 21 provides more information about writing the EJB. The EJB will receive an input message bean from the caller of the service and will extract the data from it and build the message to be sent via MQ. And it would probably be appropriate to also build the MQ IMS input header, the MQ IIH. It's used, for example, for specifying the L-term name and the MAP name for the ILPCB. And if you're in a conversation, let's say that you specify the conversation correlation token. In return, the reply message will also have a header and will contain the MAP name used for the reply message. And for IMS conversations, it will contain in there also the conversation correlation token to be used on the next input. So that's all I want to say about the asynchronous solution with WAS. Moving on to slide 22, some customers have asked for a lighter weight web services solution for IMS transactions and one that does not require a heavyweight web application server. This is the role of the IMS SOAP gateway. In this case, the web service components are generated by WebSphere Developer for System Z or its follow-on product, Rational Developer for System Z. The IMS SOAP gateway is a program that acts as the web services server and runs on Windows, AAX, and Z Linux platforms, and a ZOS version has recently also been made available. The IMS SOAP gateway works in conjunction with IMS Connect. The SOAP gateway extracts the transaction message, still in XML format, from the web services SOAP input and sends it to IMS Connect. IMS Connect calls the XML transformer generated by RDZ to convert the XML message into a standard character string for processing by the IMS application. And then the reverse processes happen for the reply message. Currently, the IMS SOAP gateway is restricted to commit mode 1 for transaction processing and only supports single segment messages. And it can be downloaded from the IMS website. Moving on to page 23, looking at this in a little bit more detail, this shows the steps taken when using RDZ to generate the IMS web service. As with RAD, you start by downloading the transaction program source code that contains the message structures. And from this, RDZ generates three basic things. Firstly, it generates the web service description language, the WSDL, that describes the web service in XML. This is deployed on the SOAP gateway using the supplied deployment utility. And the WSDL is also used, of course, by the remote client to generate the program that actually calls the web service. Secondly, RDZ generates a correlator file for the web service. This is also an XML file that is deployed on the SOAP gateway and identifies information relating to the required IMS connect, the L-term name, the application ILPCB, timeout values, and perhaps most importantly, the name of the XML transformation routine that's to be used by IMS Connect. That information gets passed in the IMS Connect header. Thirdly, RDZ generates the source code of the XML transformation routine. This has to be compiled and linked into the appropriate IMS Connect steplib. So, moving on to page 24. Looking now at the SCA solution and the use of WebSphere Integration Developer. This solution will execute in WebSphere Process Server once we've generated it. The unique function of WebSphere Integration Developer, WID, is to wire together fine-grained services into coarser-grained services and processes. Where you have already used RAD or RDZ to create a web service from an IMS transaction, then you can simply use WID to set up an SCA service component that imports that web service. In other words, the SCA service will be implemented by a web service. In the case of IMS transactions that use single-segment input and output messages, where you don't need to expose any properties, then you can alternatively use WID to generate an SCA component that directly uses the IMSTM resource adapter to invoke a transaction, and so avoid some of the overhead involved in invoking a web service. As with RAD and RDD, WID takes as its input the IMS transaction source code containing the message structures. WID asks for the necessary properties to be set using a GUI that looks remarkably similar to what we saw earlier with RAD and shown in the lower right of this slide. And so to summarize the development of an SCA solution, you can use WID to create an SCA service component that exploits a pre-existing web service, or you can use WID to generate a component that directly calls an IMS simple transaction. And these components would be deployed in WebSphere Process Server. So, taking stock of where we're up to, we've seen three basic ways of creating services that access IMS transactions using RAD, RDZ, or WID. In most cases, no Java coding is necessary, and the whole generation process takes just a few minutes, even in those cases with RAD, where some coded is needed. It's still an extremely quick process. So turning to page 25. It's quite normal in a service-oriented architecture for one service to call another. In recent times, quite a few customers have wanted IMS transactions to be able to call services on the web. This is called IMS callout. It's actually been possible for some time for an alternate PCB message to be routed to WebSphere application server, for example. But IMS 10 makes this much easier to implement. It allows alternate PCB routing information to be specified in routing descriptors rather than requiring user exits. Also, it allows a Java program associated with, say, user A, to request messages queued to user B, and it provides a RACF or a SAF security check to actually authorize this. Now, initially, the IMS 10 solution is an asynchronous solution. If the remote service returns a reply, then it will be routed to a completely different transaction. However, the IMS developers fully understand the need for a synchronous solution as well, a sort of alternate PCB insert and wait call function. Anyway, there are two major implementations of the asynchronous IMS callout, and they're reviewed on the next slide. So moving on to slide 26. First of all, just note that IMS itself doesn't send out messages to remote destinations until requested. If the destination is within WAS, then a listener application needs to be written and started, which issues asynchronous retrieval requests, or resume T-pipes, for one or more named queues. In IMS 10, the application calling the service does an alternate PCB insert to a destination, which is the name on a routing descriptor. The routing descriptor defines, then, both the queue name, the T-pipe name, to be used, and the IMS Connect, or group of IMS Connects, to which that alternate PCB message is to be queued. And so in this way, the Java application in WAS can retrieve messages as they become available, and either process them itself or call other services to do so. Now, if the alternate PCB message is used to call a web service, then this can be accomplished without writing any Java code. The IMS 10 SOAP gateway can act as a listener for messages originating in IMS applications. The routing descriptor can additionally specify the routine to be called by IMS Connect to transform the alternate PCB message into XML format. The IMS SOAP gateway will be listening on predefined T-pipes or queue names, and when it receives a message from the IMS application via IMS Connect, it will add the SOAP envelope and fire the web service's call off into the internet. So in other words, the IMS SOAP gateway, as well as being a web services server, is now, in version 10, an IMS SOAP services caller. All the gateway and IMS Connect components here can be generated by RDZ, but in this case, it takes as its input the web service description language, which describes the target service. So moving on to page 27. Earlier, I emphasized that implementing an SOA in practice demands the reuse of core business legacy assets. Many IMS transactions will match exactly with the business service, but in many cases there will also be a need to make some changes. Some transactions may need splitting into smaller service units. Some transactions, perhaps a set of conversational transactions, may fit the business design better if combined into one. And other smaller tweaks here and there may be appropriate. So, just putting on my IBM salesman's hat for a moment, I was proposed that the best environment for writing new or for modifying existing transactions is provided by Rational Developer for System Z. And the good news is you get two free licenses for RDZ with IMS 10, and so I'd encourage you to look at the facilities available in this amazing product, whether you're an applications person or a systems person. Now, if it is necessary to create a completely new IMS service, then there's a choice between writing a new transaction or writing a Java component running in WAS that directly accesses the IMS databases. When making this choice, always remember, of course, that the best performance and the least problems come and the application runs where the data is. So, the next few slides consider the options once it has been decided to write a new Java component to provide a service by directly accessing IMS databases. So, page 28. IMS itself includes a feature called IMS Java. And amongst other things, this enables an online IMS system to be used as a data store for WebSphere application server applications. Under the covers, WAS is exploiting the open database access feature of IMS, ODBA. Currently, WAS for Z is always required and must be on the same LPAR as the online IMS system. However, a service implemented with an EJB can execute on a different WAS and still access the IMS databases, but via WAS for Z. IMS Java allows you to write these service applications using JDBC and SQL to access the IMS databases. And so your typical Java programmer can readily write these IMS applications. You would use RAD to write the code and create deployable EJBs or web services. And for the SDA environment, you would additionally use WID to create the service component derived from a simple Java class or an EJB, or indeed by importing a web service that was built with RAD. Moving on to page 29. If your data accessing service requires more sophisticated data access, then you can use the product WebSphere Classic Federation Server for ZOS. The Federation server running on ZOS presents a whole set of databases and files as if they were a single relational data store. There is a metadata catalog that describes the relational views of all the underlying data sources, and so the clients, at development time or at runtime, simply see a single relational data store. The client piece runs on most distributed platforms and can be exploited by non-Java environments using ODBC SQL calls, and Java environments such as WebSphere using JDBC SQL calls. So, for the Java programmer writing a new data access service, IMS databases are just business as usual, and in fact, the programmer needn't have no knowledge at all that IMS is involved. And moving on to page 30. Earlier we looked at service component architecture, saw that it was a way to hide technology from the Java programmer. He doesn't need to know how to call EJBs or invoke web services and so on. He just uses a simple API to call any service. And the technology called Service Data Objects, or SDO, extends this concept in an SCA environment to accessing data. It provides a standard way to access data without knowing anything about the data store. Basically, data accesses are predefined services. The program calls a named service provided by a component called the data access service, the piece shown in red on the slide, and the input parameters to the call are the values to be used in the search criteria. The DAS then plugs the search values into predefined calls. DL1 for IMS, SQL for relational database, XQueries for native XML database accesses, and so on. And the DAS issues those calls. The results from the database are then formatted in XML, and this is returned to the program as a standard hierarchical data object called a data graph. The programmer uses a standard SDO API for manipulating these data graphs. And although it's not there yet, IMS 10 will provide a data access service for IMS. And when this is available, it will be possible to use RAD to write a Java program that retrieves and updates IMS data as SDO data, and then you can use WID to form the deployable SCA service components. So, page 31, just to summarize everything I've been talking about. SOA is about modeling the business processes as services, mapping these onto IT services, identifying where these services already exist in the core business legacy applications, and reusing as much of this as possible. IMS transactions often match the defined services very well and simply need wrapping with some Java code to enable them to be called as EJBs, SCA components, or web services. IBM's tools, RAD, WID, and RDZ, make service-enabling transactions easy and quick to do. And with RAD in particular, service-enabling IMS transactions supports a whole range of IMS application and system options. Some IMS application changes may be required, and the best tool for doing this is RDZ. And if the choice is made not to write new transactions, but to write new services as WAS applications that directly access IMS databases, then this is made simple for the Java programmer with either IMS Java or WebSphere Classic Federation Server for ZOS. And in the not-too-distant future, the Java programming will be made even simpler when IMS 10 provides the SDO support for the service component architecture environment. Thank you very much, and so I'll now hand it back over to the operator.
Thank you, Alan. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer the questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity. And now we'll move on to question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. Not technical enough? Press star 2. More technical than I needed to hear? Press star 3. Once again, we'll pause for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. And moving on to question three. What version of IMS are you on? If version 9, press star 1. If version 8, press star 3. And for version 7 and below, press star 3. Once again, version 9, that's star 1. Version 8, star 2. And version 7, star and below, star 3. And now we'll move on to question four. What is your current planned use of IMS 10? If currently have IMS 10, press star 1. If plan to install IMS 10 over the next year, press star 2. If interested in IMS 10 in the future, press star 3. If not interested in IMS 10, press star 4. Once again, we'll pause for just a moment. And our last question. We hope you've enjoyed this teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or a follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1, and if no, star 2. And that does conclude our survey for today. Thank you again for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1. Once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1 now. At this time, I'll turn the conference back over to our speakers while we wait for questions to queue.
Oh, hello again. Just while we wait to see how the technology works here, let me just say this. If when you're discussing this presentation with your, you know, your family tonight over dinner or in the days ahead, if you think of any questions, please feel free to send them through email. My email address is on the front cover of the presentation. I'll be very happy to receive and address any issues you might want to raise with me at that time in the future. But are there any questions right now?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Cooper. At this time, we do have one question in our queue. Let's go to Cameron Pimenta.
Yeah, hi. Hi, morning. That was a great presentation. Thank you. Question is, you did mention that you preferred not to use the asynchronous model. Any specific reasons why you would not prefer those, that method of...
The two reasons I think of immediately, first of all, you can't actually just generate the solution. You actually have to write Java code, so it's not as quick to develop. And I just have a sort of general difficulty of effectively calling a subroutine through messaging. It just doesn't really feel right to me. You know, I want synchronous calling of a subroutine, which is basically what the service is doing with IMS transactions. It's just calling them a subroutine. But clearly is a perfectly viable solution. And if many customers actually have a policy that all new access to IMS will be via MQ. And if that's if that policy is cast in concrete, then fine, that's the way you have to go. So it's not a particularly major feature, it's just that it's just easier to do it synchronously, and I just have this little niggle about doing things through queuing when it's unnecessary.
So it isn't really a performance issue in any way whether you use one or the other method?
Well, I have had hints of performance information. I mean, it's not as much performance, but the actual resource usage. I think the synchronous solution is more efficient, and measurably so. But it's, that shouldn't really be the deciding factor in making the choice, I don't think.
Thank you.
We have no further questions in our queue at this time, but once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Again, we'll pause for just a moment. And we have no further questions at this time. And Mr. Cooper, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope I aimed it at the right level. It's always a little bit tricky when you have an unknown audience who you're talking to, but I think it's a great topic. I think iMessage has always thought of it as being a great product, and it does fit well with SOA. So I hope that our customers will really start to put the two together. Thank you.
And thank you once again for your participation, and have a good day. That does conclude today's conference call.